The Tom Woods Show, episode 2040.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey folks, Tom Woods here. Don't forget you can get one of my books in audiobook format for free. So that includes my book, Real Descent, which is narrated by me. My New York Times bestseller, Meltdown on the Financial Crisis of 2008, featuring a foreword by Ron Paul, Nullification, and others. Just head over to tomwoodsaudio.com, sign up for Audible, and if you decide you don't want Audible, you get to keep the free audiobook they give you anyway. tomwoodsaudio.com. Hi, everybody. It's Tom Woods, and I am back from St. John Week. Now, for you guys, it was Michael Malice Week, but for me, it's the week, which I've now done 2 years in a row, first week of January, where I head to the U.S. Virgin Islands and spend about 6 days on the island of St. John. Now, by the way, do not go there and call it St. John's, you know, like Aldi's, like adding an apostrophe, yes, that doesn't belong there. They get very annoyed by that. St. John's is in Canada. This is St. John, and it's a great place to spend a little time. And I have a little bit of COVID stuff to tell you about with regard to that before I get on to our main topic for today. But the thing to know about St. John is that it actually hasn't been settled for all that long. I think it wasn't until the 20th century that it was really settled. The primary island of the U.S. Virgin Islands is St. Thomas. I think it has about the same population as St. Croix, about 50,000 people or so. But there's a lot more hustle and bustle going on St. Thomas, which, by the way, makes the other islands a little bit more attractive to me. I want, sometimes with some vacations, I want a little bit less hustle and bustle. And this is one of them. St. John has only 5,000 people, and it is accessible only by ferry. You can get there by ferry from St. Thomas, and that's it. So there's no airplanes going to land there, anything like that. And yet, despite there being only 5,000 people, because there are tourists, they've been able to build up a nice little society there. I think it's a wonderful place, great restaurants, beautiful beaches, wonderful. And stayed now 2 years in a row at a beautiful place each time. You know, there are several very nice resorts. There are a lot of Airbnbs. They drive on the left, but the steering wheel is on the left. In most places, I think when you drive on the left, the steering wheel is on the right. But the steering wheel is on the left. I haven't had the courage to try that yet. So we took the sort of unreliable taxi system there. They have no Uber or Lyft. Now, this may be more St. John information than you need. You can always fast forward. I'm just telling you, it's a fun little place to vacation. I got the idea from not St. Tom DiLorenzo, although he's a fine man who knows what the future may hold, but our friend Tom DiLorenzo, who is the author of numerous books on history and economics, and recently retired as a professor of economics at Loyola Baltimore. But anyway, he gave me the idea. And a lot of St. John is just a giant national park. There are two main places you might stay. There's Cruise Bay and Coral Bay. Now, of course, Tom wants to stay in Coral Bay because it's the more remote and fewer people. Cruise Bay is where I've been staying. And so if you want to really get around the island because of the unreliable taxi service, you really need to rent your own car. And I just so far haven't had the guts to do that. But now that I know my way around, I think I probably could drive. I'm just worried about driving on the left. And Tom says, it's actually really easy. It's just that when you get to an intersection, you have to remember that when you make that turn, you got to stay in the left lane. Because they don't have competition from Uber and Lyft, there are a couple of things. First of all, I think the taxi rates are regulated by the government of the Virgin Islands. And what that actually means is that the taxi rates are among the cheapest things on the whole island, oddly enough. Everything is very expensive on St. John, as I found. A package of bacon. Now, usually you buy bacon when it's on sale. A package of bacon not on sale, regular Oscar Mayer bacon that I saw in a grocery store, was $18. It's not cheap to be on St. John, but it's fun. And you're not there for your whole life. You're just there a little bit. And in fact, what a lot of people do is who live on St. John is they take the ferry over to St. Thomas and they just load up with groceries and they bring them all the way back. And they do that once a month and it saves them a lot of money. Anyway, the point is, oddly enough, the taxi fares are so low that I think if you're actually paying those fares and not giving huge tips, then you're a terrible cheapskate of a person. I gave ridiculous tips the entire time we were there because I thought, how can you survive on this island on these dinky fares? How are you going to live? given how expensive everything is. So you just give big tips to them. But the thing is, if you need a taxi from the ferry dock, there'll be a lot of taxis there. But if you're in the middle of St. John, or for that matter, if you're in the middle of St. Thomas, and you just pick up the phone and say, hey, I need a taxi, it's a struggle. I was in the middle of St. Thomas. I was in some neighborhood. We had to go to Walgreens, and that's not a really touristy area. So I picked up the phone, and I must have called 7 taxi places before I found one that would come out and get us. So you really do, ideally, want to have a vehicle. Anyway, a lot of fun. So I have a couple of interesting COVID observations I'll make. One was, we had dinner reservations for a couple of great restaurants on St. John, both of which were canceled because of COVID staffing issues. We weren't told anything beyond that. And then numerous other restaurants that we considered trying as alternatives were closed for the same reason. So one night we went to a cheese bar, a wine and cheese bar, that occasionally has a little bit of food. So if you're kind of peckish but don't want a full dinner, this is a place you could go. We kind of did want a full dinner. And they actually that night had prepared quite a bit of food because they realized they were one of the only places open on the island. And we got there early before everybody else realized there were very few other places to eat. So we realized this is the place to go. So we went. And I was just thinking, I wonder if this is because of the infectiousness of Omicron, just the idea that everybody has to quarantine. Now, they've got it down to the 5 days, I guess. I don't know if the Virgin Islands got that or not. The Virgin Islands is extremely masked and extremely panicky and weird. And at the same time, they're trying to cater to tourists. It's a weird balancing act that they've got. So I don't know. But the result was a lot of people were not able to earn a living that particular day. In fact, I think through the weekend, there was one restaurant that was supposed to be open by Friday for reservations for Saturday, and they were just closed until the moment we took the ferry to St. Thomas and left. So these people must have been devastated by what's been done. They just must have. As I say, especially given how high the cost of living is there. Very sad. If you are on my email list, which I hope by this point all you guys are, because I keep begging and pleading and telling you, you're not going to be sad that you're on it. You know the story of what happened when I confronted a person who urged me to put a mask on. So you already know that story. If you're not on my list, it's never too late, but it's getting there. Okay, so hop on the list at tomwoods.com. Right at the top of tomwoods.com, you'll see. Now, I may be redesigning my homepage, and so this may not hold for more than a few more months, but after I redesign the homepage, the join my list thing will be so in your face, there'll be no way to miss it. But right now, there's a little red button, sign me up button. Just click that and get on there, because that's where a lot of the great meat of the Tom Woods universe is to be found. Now, by the way, you got to turn off your ad blocker, or the little box to enter your email address can't pop up. So I know you love those things, but you got to turn them off when you go to tomwoods.com. Just click sign me up and you'll be on there. But yeah, we were riding in one of these open air taxis that have about 4 or 5 rows, maybe 4 rows for passengers. It's completely open with wind blowing through the whole thing. And we had people telling me to put on a mask. You read that story, didn't you? I didn't raise my voice, didn't lose my cool, but I explained the nonsense involved here. Of course, they had never heard any of this because it was a family and it was a young college student who was harassing us. And she obviously is in one of these safe space kind of liberal arts schools where she's never required to defend herself. The first thing out of my mouth was, well, you know, if you compare demographically similar populations that live side by side and have different masking policies, you find the same case trajectory in both. So it seems to indicate the masks don't really do a whole lot. So I went beyond that. And I just kept, you know, just giving them arguments over and over. So it was interesting. But then the other thing is, so we went over to St. Thomas, and while we were in St. Thomas, we were waiting for the ferry back to St. John. We got a little bite to eat. There was a guy in the ferry dock area who sells food. It actually was not bad. I thought this is going to be the worst food I've ever tasted. No. It was not bad at all. And some woman came up to him to order food, and she's masked, you know, like a hysteric. And she's got her 2-year-old child, or I don't know, 2 maybe. It looked like a 2-year-old child. And she approached him, and he's got one of these, you know, disposable cloth masks down on his chin. And as she's ordering, she stops herself and says, "Can you please put your mask on? Can you please put your mask on?" And she points to her presumably unvaccinated two-year-old child. Her two-year-old child is under vastly greater danger of the ferry sinking than of any problems coming from COVID. Now, am I a bad parent? If any of my five kids came down with this, I wouldn't be worried at all. I would think, you know, I guess this will be good for their immune system. There is so little risk to five healthy children that to obsess over it is psychotic. That's the way I look at it. It's psychotic. Yeah, there's a risk, but no greater of a risk than I take in many, many other situations in my life. So I would not be worried about that at all. We'd keep an eye on it and that would be the end of it. And a two-year-old in particular. So he complied, he put the mask up. Now, of course, we're looking at a mask that obviously at this point, everybody knows can't possibly do anything. But she thinks that if he puts that up, that'll keep them safe. And I'm sitting there because I'm waiting for my food. I'm sitting there watching this whole thing. So she left and I went up to him with a $20 bill and I stuffed it in his tip jar. And I said, "This is for dealing with that hypochondriac." And then I used a five-letter word. And you may say to me, "Woods, that's not kind." Yeah, I think I've been as reasonable as I can be with people like this. Because this is exactly the kind of person who is forcing insanity on other people's children because of her psychotic inability to assess risk. She is the type of person who has been dividing and destroying societies and families, pitting them against each other because of this craziness, shutting down people's livelihoods. Nope, sorry, no sympathy whatsoever. Your kid's going to be fine. Anybody who isn't completely psychotic knows that. So I said to this guy, "This is for dealing with that psychotic." And he just laughed. He's born and raised in St. Thomas, laughed and laughed and said, "She wanted a fight. I didn't want to give her a fight. I just put the mask on, but I knew she was trying to get me started with a fight. I wouldn't give it to her." And I was glad I could see he was a kindred spirit. I said, "I knew there had to be some sane people left in this world." So we just had a big old laugh and became instant friends. And he wished us the best as we headed back over to St. John. So that was a little bit of my story there. Let me take the rest of the time to say a little something about the Supreme Court. Now, of course, you guys have already been reading about this over the past several days. I couldn't be more timely about it because, of course, I had that whole Michael Malice week ready for you guys. So I am coming in on this late, so I'm not going to review a lot of the information that you probably know. And of course, there's a bit of a disadvantage here in that I don't know how the court is going to rule yet. But these are things I would want to say whether or not I knew how the court was going to rule on the Biden vaccine mandates. You all saw that Sotomayor made a variety of bizarre and obviously false claims, like there were 100,000 children in serious condition now with COVID, because of COVID, and that many of them were on ventilators. Well, that was so bad that even PolitiFact and the Washington Post rated that totally false. It's just an absurd exaggeration, the Washington Post called it. The real number is about 3,300. And most of those, or at least a big chunk of those, I don't know the exact numbers, are incidental. We've never in the entire run of this thing had 100,000, even if you add them all up. So this is all just crazy lunacy. Then we have her saying that she doesn't understand why the states would have the power to do something and the federal government wouldn't. So this is a Supreme Court justice, understands nothing about the 10th Amendment or the federal system or why our Constitution is the way it is. She has no idea. Great. Great. Then Kagan, we have saying that we know that the best way to stop the spread is through vaccination. Who's we? This contradicts pretty much all available evidence at this point. And she's just going to repeat it. I mean, these are people who, if you curate your friends well, have wondered if really exist. And here they are on the Supreme Court. You wonder if people this ignorant really exist. There they are on the Supreme Court. And then you have Justice Breyer warning that without the mandates, because there have been some concern the mandates will lead to a lot of people being out of the workforce, but without the mandates, people will be afraid to work alongside the unvaccinated. Well, they have no reason to be. They have absolutely zero reason to be, because that has nothing to do with whether the virus is transmitted or not. So what I want to do, though, because I think a lot of people did hear that stuff, is run through the amicus brief filed by something called the American Commitment Foundation. And this is going to be challenging some of the questions of fact that were taken for granted when earlier courts looked at this question of mandates, but that have changed in the interim. So this is not a brief that's dealing really with the question of constitutionality. Is it constitutionally acceptable for the president via OSHA to impose mandates of this sort? That, of course, is the primary question at the heart of this. But what they're going to be arguing in this amicus brief is that also the facts of the matter have changed. The material facts of the matter are different now and make the case for the mandates even weaker. And this is, by the way, I think probably goes back to Oliver Wendell Holmes and around then, but it seems like what we are seeing here in some of the argumentation is an outgrowth of so-called sociological jurisprudence, that we shouldn't just impartially impose strict legal rules. We need to think of the practical impacts of these rules on society. And so we need supplementary data on this or that subject that would have been viewed as irrelevant to justices in the past. But anyway, this is where we are. And so here we go with what they have to say. Now, what's interesting about this, and this is why I choose to share it with you, is that I don't think a lot of people shared this. A lot of people shared that Sotomayor is an idiot and stuff like that. But I don't think anybody read this amicus brief. And so I'm going to post it at tomwoods.com/2040, so you can read it for yourself. It's not very long, and it's actually got a lot of information that might come in handy in your discussions with other people. But I share it in particular because it was written by two people, Andrew Bostom, whom I have followed but have not had on the Tom Woods Show, and also Andrew Bostom is of Brown University, also Jay Bhattacharya of Stanford University, who, as you know, has been a guest on the Tom Woods Show several times. So I found it interesting to see what they had to say about this matter. Now, before we do that, a quick word. Hey, everybody, it is New Year's resolution time. And how many times have we resolved to be a better this or a better that, and to accomplish this goal or that goal all under our own strength? Now, there's nothing wrong with that, but there's also nothing wrong with admitting that you need a little outside help. And maybe 2022 is the year you resolve to get better with a little help. So if you've been struggling with relationships or depression or anxiety or stress or a multitude of other problems we associate with mental health, let this be the year you reach out and get the help you need. I do not feel the slightest bit of shame in telling you that I myself have used BetterHelp when I needed it. BetterHelp matches you with your own licensed professional therapist based on your particular needs. You can schedule weekly video or phone sessions. You can send messages. You never have to leave your home. You don't have to be confined to the therapists in your geographical area who may not have the specialties you need. It's available to people all over the world. Anything you share is confidential. It's convenient, professional, affordable. Check out the testimonials being posted daily on their site. And by the way, if you feel like the therapist you were assigned isn't quite a fit for you, they'll get you another one. I want you to start living a happier life today. As a listener, you'll get 10% off your first month by visiting betterhelp.com/woods. Join over 1 million people taking charge of their mental health. Again, that's betterhelp, HELP.com/woods. So here is the introduction and summary of their argument with regard to the facts of the matter. Reads as follows. Substantial new factual developments related to the Omicron variant arising after the filing, briefing, and arguing of the original cases substantially undermine the government's justification for the ETS standard, or emergency temporary standard. The Omicron variant is, or will shortly be, the dominant viral strain in the United States, accounting for nearly all new SARS-CoV-2 infections. This significant change in circumstances negates the factual basis for the OSHA order in two ways. It dramatically reduces the risk of severe illness or death, and it renders the existing vaccines ineffective at reducing transmissions, thereby negating any possible societal benefit from mandating their use. The court should completely disregard any fact evidence developed prior to the rise of Omicron, including the original vaccine trials, which showed efficacy against the original wild-type virus, which is no longer in circulation. Presently available vaccines may confer a personal benefit against severe disease from the Omicron variant, but do not confer any demonstrable societal benefit because they do not effectively reduce infections or transmission. They simply cannot protect workers from the spread of SARS-CoV-2 in the workplace. With the Omicron variant now dominant, vaccine mandates cannot possibly stop viral transmission. Therefore, they amount to a personal health mandate akin to a requirement to eat broccoli, exercise, or any number of personal health measures that the court has previously rejected as beyond the scope of legitimate federal power. So then they proceed into the nuts and bolts of the argument. So they say the Omicron variant now accounts for the majority of new SARS-CoV-2 infections in the United States and is expected to represent substantially all new infections within weeks. And they have some charts and they talk about the trajectory in South Africa. And so they say it's likely that by the time the court decides whether to grant a stay, that is a continued holding off on the enforcement of the mandates until still further discussion can take place. Well, by that point, Omicron will represent basically all the infections in the U.S., SARS-CoV-2, and that fact renders nearly all of the fact evidence in the record obsolete. Then their second heading, Omicron does not present a grave danger. And we even see that in Fauci finally admitting that, by the way. But he'll say, yeah, but the sheer numbers could overwhelm that. Okay, but even he has to admit that the initial data out of South Africa, which the hysterics had to dismiss, they had to say, oh, it's not the right season, and if it were, this would be even worse. I mean, they had to come up with something. And even they have had to say, well, maybe it's not quite as terrible as we thought. I mean, some of them were predicting 75,000 deaths in a matter of weeks, and they've had to walk that back. Likewise, data from Scotland suggests the same optimistic conclusion. We read from the UK, early national data suggests that Omicron is associated with a 2/3 reduction in the risk of COVID-19 hospitalization when compared to Delta. Likewise, a very substantially less likely, lower likelihood of hospital admission from Omicron versus Delta. We find in data that has come out from Denmark. The brief then points to research out of Hong Kong University that demonstrates the likely mechanism behind how it could be that Omicron would be more infectious but have reduced virulence. It replicates far more efficiently in the bronchus and upper respiratory tract than Delta, but less efficiently in the lungs. And then finally, they return to data out of South Africa, which shows the case numbers peaking at about 97% of the Delta wave. So similar in terms of those numbers. But the deaths were only 13% of where they were at the peak of Delta. Then they quote some South African scientists saying this, all indicators suggest the country may have passed the peak of the fourth wave at a national level. While the Omicron variant is highly transmissible, there have been lower rates of hospitalization than in previous waves. This means that the country has a spare capacity for admission of patients, even for routine health services. And so the first country, says the brief, that experienced a wave of this variant has concluded without a doubt that this dominant variant presents no grave danger. They show that the early data out of the U.S. confirms this, and they say also, which is interesting, that there's strong early evidence that infection with the Omicron variant offers you robust protection against the Delta variant. So even if the Delta variant did still pose a grave danger, it would, according to the brief, be counterproductive, and they italicize the word counterproductive, to stop or slow the spreading of the presently dominant Omicron variant. Well, what does it mean for the working age population, which is what OSHA is supposed to be concerned with? Well, here's how they put it. With Omicron's observed decline in severity, expected working age deaths fall into a range comparable to, or even lower than, the CDC's modeled 8,000 influenza deaths in 2017 to 2018. Quite simply, the Omicron variant is now a normal respiratory virus, not an unusual, extraordinary, or grave danger. There is no evidence in the record specific to Omicron to support a grave danger finding. Then their third heading is vaccines are ineffective at preventing Omicron infections. And they point out, in case anybody wants to challenge this or censor what I'm saying, that Pfizer and Moderna openly admit this. They say it too, so ban them too. They openly admit that they are not able to provide robust protection against Omicron. At Duke University, researchers doing work funded by the NIH, which is where Dr. Fauci works, found the same thing. And then the brief says, real-world evidence from at least four countries with significant experience with Omicron, Denmark, the United Kingdom, Germany, and Canada, all of which provide more detailed and transparent data than has been made available in the United States, evidences that these vaccines have, and these three words are now in italics, substantially zero efficacy at preventing Omicron transmission, undermining the central rationale for mandating them in the workplace. And then scientists in Denmark analyzed the data, and they found, and this is something you may have seen online, by the way, and you don't always know just because somebody agrees with me on something or doesn't like Dr. Fauci, doesn't mean they're right on everything. And this one seemed almost too extraordinary to credit, but Bhattacharya and Bostrom put it in here. And they say that these researchers found that vaccine efficacy turned negative after 91 days following the second dose. So in other words, vaccinated Danes were even more likely than unvaccinated Danes to be infected with Omicron after 3 months. Remember, I've got this linked at tomwoods.com/2040 if you want to see it for yourself. The German equivalent of the CDC found that 78.6%, this is the most recent detailed report we have from them, that 78.6% of sequenced Omicron cases were in vaccinated Germans, despite a population vaccination rate of just 70%. Then they cite data from the UK Health Security Agency, and they say that these estimates are remarkably like the Danish findings, with near zero vaccine efficacy for both Pfizer and Moderna vaccines after 20 weeks following the second dose. In Ontario, Canada, the case rate per 100,000 fully vaccinated Ontarians has risen sharply above the case rate per 100,000 unvaccinated Ontarians, again suggesting, and again, these are their words in italics, negative vaccine efficacy. Now, bear in mind, Bhattacharya and Bostrom are sharing other people's findings, not their own, other people's findings. Secondly, Bhattacharya and Bostrom are not anti-vax. They're not anti-vaccine in principle. So they're not going around trying to find maybe the worst numbers they can possibly find. They really are about as impartial as it's possible for somebody to be here. So they conclude by arguing against the OSHA order, and they say that substantial new factual developments related to the Omicron variant, which arose subsequent to the filing, briefing, and arguing of the original cases, substantially undermine any possible justification for the government's ETS. Even if SARS-CoV-2 did present a grave danger justifying the ETS at the time it was published, a highly controversial assertion in its own right, at this time the Omicron virus that presently dominates the field does not even arguably present a grave danger. Nor could its transmission be substantially reduced through mandatory vaccination, even if it did present a grave danger. All right, a couple things I want to say before we wrap up here. Remember, you can look over this document that I've been discussing. See it for yourself. I put it up at tomwoods.com/2040. I'm sure it's online somewhere, but I got it emailed to me, and so I just posted it up on my own site. So tomwoods.com/2040. You're going to find a lot of great stuff in there, great graphs, a lot of data, footnotes, more studies than I mentioned here in this summary. So I think you're going to find it a really helpful resource. The other thing is, I am making a very important announcement on February 1st, and I will not be making it on the podcast because by the time you guys hear it, it will have passed because it's an announcement that is extremely time sensitive. The announcement is coming February 1st, 2022. It is an announcement of the most important thing I've ever done. And it's an announcement that will warm the hearts, this is what I'll tell you right now, will warm the hearts of people who have just grown accustomed to living in a world where every major institution hates you and is going to try to screw you and ruin your life at every opportunity. And I don't just mean your livelihood. It's far from that. There are a lot of things these people are trying to ruin and destroy and put a boot on your face. And we've just kind of grown accustomed to, oh, I guess that's just the world we live in. Nothing we can do. They're just going to undermine us at every single turn. And people who hate us are going to be barking out orders at us forever and making our lives miserable. Is there really nothing that can be done? I think there is, but it's not what you think. And that's going to be my announcement. So I've already given away too much, if anything. I've already given away too much. But my point is, you're going to want to hear what this is. And to hear what this is, to be the first to hear what this is, because as I say, this is time sensitive. What I'm announcing February 1st goes away February 1st. I'm announcing it at 9 a.m. Eastern Time. And to get the announcement, go to tomwoodsannouncement.com and sign up to hear it. And you say, oh, I don't want to be on another email list, Woods. I will email you that day for that list and then never again. That list will be destroyed after that day. I will email you that day for that list, but never again. This is the most important thing I have ever done, and I'm calling on you guys to join me in it. So tomwoodsannouncement.com is where to go, and I'll see you all tomorrow.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.